Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Well, good evening, everybody. I would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. It is Wednesday, September 22nd, 2021. This is scan number 2753. Our type of show tonight is special guest night, and we have a very special guest and actually guests with us this evening. As you may or may not be aware, our NASCA sister, Victoria Kelly from Minneapolis, Minnesota, is our special guest this evening. And I'm going to tell you in a little bit more detail in just a few minutes, a little bit more about Victoria, about why she's here, and her other volunteers that are helping her with an event coming up for her organization called AHHHS. But before I tell you all about that, I want to talk a little bit about being on the panel this evening. If you wish to participate in our panel, how to do that. And join tonight and become active in our conversation with Victoria, and also a little bit about what NASCA is all about, NASCA's mission statement. So if you wish to join the show this evening, it's really simple. Just call the following number. It's area code 646-595-2118. That's it. So you dial 646-595-2118. You'll be able to hear the show. And when the time comes and we go through the panel, I will unmute your mic and you'll have an opportunity to talk to Victoria about. So I want to tell you a little bit more before I bring Victoria on about NASCA. NASCA, as you know, stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And NASCA is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. And the first goal is educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through many paths. This show, which is on five nights a week, Monday through Friday, is one of them, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So if you wish to join the show this evening, have no experience necessary. We're happy to have you join us. The number to do that is area code 646-595-2118. To learn a little bit more about NASCA, I encourage you to go on NASCA's website. It's naasca.org. That's NASCA.org. You will learn that we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We are fully funded through donations and by our members. a lot of information on that website about all the programs and services that we offer, adult survivors of child abuse, so many resources, a plethora of resources, and on the front page is the schedule of the show, ways for you to get involved and volunteer, and also a contribute button if you wish to contribute to NASCA. Since we are self-supporting, even a couple dollars helps. So thank you very much for your consideration of that. And before I bring Victoria on, I want to tell you a little bit more about Victoria Kelly. She is a longtime member and volunteer of the NASCA family. She's from Minneapolis, Minnesota. She is accompanied by some friends, and one of her friends is already on the line, Amy Anna. She's from California. Because Victoria is having a huge event. It's an AHHS event on Saturday, September 25th. That is this Saturday. And in case you're curious, the acronym or the abbreviation for A Helping Hand for Healing Souls. I love that. It's a day-long event. It goes from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. And it will be held locally on Friday in Minnesota and virtually over Zoom. It includes multiple presentations for adults. These are for parents and survivors and for children. There are many notable speakers that will be featured as well. You can contact Victoria for more detailed information. I'll give you that email address now. I know we're going to repeat it again during the show, but I feel like we cannot over-communicate this. So the email address is ahhhs1@yahoo.com. And I'll tell you, Victoria, she certainly knows her stuff. Victoria was abused almost from birth in nearly every way imaginable, sexually, physically, and mentally. She eventually became withdrawn and reclusive. She began to dissociate, and that became a condition which was later in her life diagnosed as MPD, multiple personality disorder, which is now known as DID, or dissociative identity disorder. So Victoria eventually spent years going in and out of mental hospitals where she actually was grateful. And she said, and I've heard her story before, Victoria is remarkable, I'm saying that as an aside. At least the staff there in the mental hospitals, they were kind and helpful. And then she went on to work with a wonderful psychiatrist, and this woman, she helped her for 13 years with her DID. So Victoria had been drinking in her youth, but she became sober with the help from a 12-step group. Her sexual promiscuity led her to numerous bad adult relationships, and it took a long time to find the right therapist and past recovery. But now, happily and hopefully, she's integrated. And this happened years ago, things finally started to come together. Life, as she says, is still not perfect, but now she's active helping the struggling. And among other things, what her AHHS event is all about, she works to end domestic and sexual violence. So I'm going to stop there. There's so much about Victoria, and I could actually talk about it for the whole 90 minutes. But as you know, this is a 90-minute show, and it's not about me talking. We want to hear from Victoria. So without further ado, Victoria, I'm going to unmute your line, and I'm going to unmute Amy Anna's line, and I'm going to welcome you both into the show.
Thank you very much. I'm really glad to be back on here. I've been on before, and a lot of people probably heard my story, and you just gave some brief descriptions, and there's a lot more, but tonight we really don't want to focus on my story. We want to focus on the, going from victim to survivor to advocate to organizer to educating the community and allowing survivors a way to speak out about what has happened in their lives. When I started working with the Battered Women Sexual Assault Movement in 1986, it was very interesting because the people that were at the conference was talking about it were talking about us. You know, they were the doctors and the people that ran the shelters and things like that. And so it was what they learned in books and how they observed us. So it was the us and them thing. And I want to make sure that our organization was about survivors being the ones that are not only running it, but the ones that are deciding in the direction that it's going to go and providing a place for survivors to speak out. And so we decided, Amy Anna and I decided, we started working together and decided to do this event, which has been taking like hours and hours of her time, my time, and another woman named Rita Marie, who has been, all of us have just been putting so much time in this, you know, and it's all volunteers. Nobody's getting paid a penny. And we've got, we're out there on social media, and we're not a support group. I just want to make that very clear. We're not a support group. We refer everybody to NASCA. And I'm the Minnesota ambassador for NASCA. So, you know, like I have some resources and stuff, but you know, like you said, NASCA has so much information. It's just, it's unbelievable. I was talking to Bill one time, and the founder of NASCA, and he said, you know, I wanted to make the website something that I wish I had that I could have went to when I was looking for help. You know, and I think he has done a fantastic job doing that. Because when I first met Bill, I don't know how many years ago it was. Seems like I've known him forever. And I love him to death. And when I first met him, you know, I talked to him a little bit about my childhood sexual abuse and things. And I didn't start speaking out, though, because I didn't escape. They don't even call it leaving anymore. Escaped from my biological father, who I called my sperm donor, because really the only good thing he ever did. And not until I was 21. So I blame myself, you know. And until I talked to Bill and he talked about how kids get groomed, you know, and the feeling of not, you know, not even knowing, you know, how to escape a situation with all kinds of threats to my life and to my daughter, you know, I went to a psych ward one time and I was trying to get in because I was suicidal, and I told a psychiatrist about my dad molesting me, raping me from infancy till I was 21. And she said, well, you must have enjoyed it, or you would have stayed so long and you wouldn't kept going back. And I hadn't even been admitted yet. And my thought was, I'm going to leave here and kill myself. But I stayed, thank God. And that was back when I didn't know to know that what they said, you know, was off the wall. And mm-hmm. And since then, I've gotten so much help. But I really want to say that, you know, I contribute a lot of my healing to the psychiatric units that I was in, too. I was in a revolving door. But I also want to mainly say the main support I got from other survivors, you know, and mm-hmm. and not the health professionals, but from survivors. Because for the first time in my life, I had met survivors and realized I was not alone. And I was believed. And the reason why I know I was believed, because they had went through a lot of the same things I did. And a lot of people hear my story and they're like, oh my God, at least I didn't go through that. You know, and I'm like, you know what? We do not compare. We do not compare stories. No child should be abused or neglected. And I say, or neglect with it. Because unfortunately, a lot of people don't know that neglect is child abuse. Even survivors don't. Even survivors don't seem to connect that, you know. And so anyway, that's kind of the little bit of my background that has forced me, or not forced me, but inspired me. That's what I want to say. Inspired me to try to meet with other survivors and come to a point where we can make a project that would engage not only survivors, but educate the community. And we wanted to make a visual statement, and we wanted survivors to be able to feel like they they could do it where they wouldn't disclose who they were, because not everybody can stand up and speak, you know. I'm finally safe and I can. But anyway, so what we're doing is called the Clothesline Around the World. It's similar to the Clothesline Project Better Women do, but we can't use that term because they've got it coined. And but we're doing the Clothesline Around the World. It was going to be across America, but we got people from all over the world that want us to bring it to them. And we're having an all-day event with speakers. Bill Murray is our featured speaker, the founder of NASCAR. And we've got Amy Anna, who's also on the line, who's my co-coordinator. She's going to be reading some poetry. And we've got some authors and people ahead of organizations. And we've got kids' activities in a separate area from the adult activities. And we've got Minnesota Missing Children coming out. And they're doing three separate educational programs for different age groups. And a parent education on how to keep their children safe. You know, it's no longer the stranger danger thing. You know, because we know now that 7% of sexual abuse is done by strangers. And the most dangerous place for children to be is in their own homes, which is really scary because when, like, COVID hit, you know, my first thought was, oh, my God, I can't go to – oh, my God, I can't go to the grocery store. It was, oh, my God, what about those kids that are trapped in those homes, you know?
And, absolutely.
And child abuse and domestic violence have rampaged, and I can't even imagine what it's going to be like when kids start going back to school, doctors, community events, and start revealing what happened to them while they were trapped in their homes, you know? And yeah. So that's a concern for me. And, you know, I believe that it's every adult's responsibility, if not a legal responsibility, a moral responsibility to protect every child in the world. And I'm going to let Amy Anna come on and talk a little bit more about what the Clothesline Project is. And if she would like to do that.
That'd be great. So, Amy Anna, your mute is unmiked, and you're welcome to give us some information about that. I'm very intrigued, and I know that there are a lot of people listening in right now that are as well.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, we're in the Clothesline Project. I'm really excited about it. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the Clothesline Project or Clothesline Around the World, it is well, kind of like a silent speak out where we take an article of clothing and a survivor or a supporter can put an inspiring message, a word or anything about their experience on the piece of clothing, and then we hang it out and show the world. You know, it's all anonymous. There's not, like, any names on the clothing or anything. But it's just another way to kind of speak out and be a part of something bigger. And things, so, like, you'd get a T-shirt and write hope on it or write, you know, whatever the message is. And then we... You can send it into Victoria has an address where the clothes are going, and hopefully we're going to tour around the world and hang it up in different areas and do other events like the one coming up this Saturday for us. And so far, we have many articles of clothing. Some are very moving. Some are hopeful. Victoria's also, for those who don't have she's also having an option of if you just want to send in your writing or what you want to say, you can do that also, and she will put it on an article of clothing or a sheet to display So you don't even have to send an article of clothing. You can still get the message out. And we're really excited about this. It's hopefully going to, you know, keep this going and have other clothes and everything travel around the world and show what an impact abuse has on adult survivors of child abuse. And we do have a lot of speakers coming up. Like Victoria said, we're going to have an open mic talent share, which I'm going to be doing poetry, but if anybody has a song or any other kind of talent they want to share related to overcoming abuse or anything, they're welcome to share that. That's going to be after 5 p.m. Minnesota time. And I'm gonna start that off. And that could be online, that could be virtual or in person. And and we're gonna have a lighted walk after that, after we get done talking. At 7 p.m. we're gonna from one pavilion to the other with either our cell phones or a flashlight, or just something lighted for the survivors and those that we lost because of abuse and stuff. So we're really excited about that. I'll let Victoria go ahead and tell more.
Well, actually, I have a couple questions on Amy Anna and Victoria, just because I questions are coming to me, and I'm wondering if other people listening are having the same ones, so I thought I'd just get them out there. And first is, yep. There is, I know I did provide an email address, and I'll keep repeating that, you know, throughout the show on how to get a hold of you for more information. But is there a website somewhere else?
No, okay. We are like working off pennies right now. I mean, I want to get I just want to tell you a little history. I get $104 a month because I am in an assisted living facility. And that's all I get. And so I reserved a pavilion for the main event and had to do an application fee, which altogether totaled $113. And I would like to say thank you, God, for the change jar. And anyway, got that paid. And everybody's like, I can't believe you spent all your money. And I said, well, I used to be a compulsive gambler, and I'd blow all my money and be upset all the rest of the month at myself, you know. So I said, at least this is the way I feel really good about it. And then we got another $75 in donations. So we ended up renting another pavilion at the other end of the park by the playground to have children's activities, because we didn't want the children, you know, where the adult activities were going on and where this clothesline could be viewed, you know. I mean, we're not going to stop parents from bringing their kids to view it, but we certainly don't want, you know, the kids right in shooting distance if their parents don't want them, you know, hearing these stories and stuff. And, like, some of the clothes are pretty extreme. And, like, mine says, some children are too young to tell, you know. I couldn't fight him off. You know, I mean, so there's some pretty heavy things on there. There's some other ones, like, you know, I said no, and, you know, that wouldn't stop him, things like that. So, you know, we really want to get out what people want to say, you know, either what happened to them, how they felt about it then, how they feel about it now, or, like Amy Anna said, a message to the community, either on the impact and the trauma that many of us still experience as adult survivors of child abuse, or a message to the community about protecting children, nurturing children, and the message basically that we are not going to tolerate this anymore. And I tell you what, I feel like screaming it from the rooftops, but I have a feeling everybody would shut their windows and lock their doors. You know, there's a crazy woman screaming. So this is the way I'm screaming. You know, I want to get in people's faces, and I want people to understand that, as you said, this is a pandemic problem. You know, everybody's saying that, you know, COVID, yeah, and COVID is a real issue and a real pandemic problem. But, you know, child abuse has killed more children than COVID ever has or ever will. This has been going on for years. All those survivors have been speaking out. A lot of times you're just speaking to each other. It's like, you know, preaching to the choir. And I want to get out into the communities. And if anybody that's listening or listens in the future to these are recorded, there's a link on NASCA, and the link goes to my Facebook page, and anybody can write to me. And let me know. I'll be changing my address because I'm moving soon. I just have a P.O. box right now. But I'm going to probably keep the P.O. box just so I can have my own safety, you know. But even after the event, we'd like to invite people to send clothes because, as Indiana said, we are going to – our plans, we already got like five other states that want us to come. And if anybody wants us to come to their state or their community or whatever, please contact me. And I'll, you know, put it down, and maybe you can even help us and try to organize out there and get some of your organizations that you're involved in this as well. Oz is very open in working with other organizations, and matter of fact, is desiring to work with other organizations because, you know, there's so many organizations that are concerned about children being hurt and adult survivors living with the trauma, that we're all out there for the same purpose. And I think we really need to embrace each other so that we can get the message out there and, you know, join forces. And this is one way that we believe we can join forces, by taking it, first of all, throughout the U.S. because the borders are closed off, and then throughout the world. We have a couple people outside of the United States that, you know, are just overjoyed if we could come there. And so people can continue to send us clothing. And as Amiana said, I got a giant blue sheet, which I can write on both sides. And also you can write on both sides of the clothing because, you know, that'll be displayed. And I'll just tell you that I feel like the universe has been raining on us because I can't believe that we're getting this put together. You know, and so we got that extra 75 donated to get the kids gazebo. I've had some people that have volunteered to help, you know, because a lot of people have good intent that have backed out at the last minute. But I'll tell you what, more people have showed up to help. And it's just all evening out, you know. And anyway, I had a guy doing the sound system and he backed out. So I didn't know what I was going to do. And I needed a projector and a screen, and I got a volunteer that's willing to rent those items for us to have the event so that we can have the Zoom meeting. We're also going to be doing Facebook Live all day long, and it's also going to be on Clapper, so which is another app a lot of people don't know about. But anyway, we'd like you to join us. I'm not sure if we're going to have anybody that's going to be able to monitor the Facebook Live if people are writing messages. But I think I can save the messages and stuff, and that I could possibly respond. We have a group on Facebook, which is Oz. Again, A with three H's, an S, and the number one. And then the word closed after it. Now, this is for people, not for a support group. Again, we go back to that. It's for people that want to take action, be it your organization, individuals, or our allies or survivors. And, you know, that's what we're about. We're about taking action, getting out there. We're not about outing perps. We're not about any of that. We're about giving a platform for survivors to speak out either anonymously or vocally, or as Amiana said, you know, through music or poetry or whatever. And if people want to come to the open mic and want to, you know, share for like 5 minutes their story and their triumphs and their struggles, you know, we want everybody to join in. And you, again, you can contact me on Facebook or email. Facebook, you just click on the link on NASCA's website page, It's got my name right there. If you click on that link, they also have a group on Facebook. Yeah, that's where it is. And you click on the link, and it'll go to my Facebook profile, and you can write to me there.
So, yeah, let me – so just to I'm going to repeat that again so people can hear. There is a way for you to go on the Internet, okay, and get information. Go on www.naasca.org. You will see then Victoria's information. That is a way that you can get to her. You can get connected to her on the NAASCA webpage. So I just want to make that clear. You don't have to email her directly straight off. You just want to go to the NAASCA website. It's www.naasca.org. There is a hyperlink there to get to Victoria. So, Victoria, I just want to let you guys, just very quickly, because Victoria and Amy and I mentioned a few things, and they were talking about, you know, just the in quarantine COVID and children being home, children were at higher risk. And we talked about, and Victoria talked about some statistically that, you know, used to be the verbiage and the slogan really was a stranger danger, but we know that children are at risk within their home. And so this comes from the NAASCA website. So just to let you know, this event's going to be very, very well attended. If you're thinking that you want to attend, but you're not really sure, you don't really want to stand out, you want to, you know, still kind of, you're not comfortable yet with just 100% putting yourself out there and you feel like you'll be exposed, there are a lot of people that are adult survivors of child abuse, and there are a lot of still children and people being abused. So this is a truly, and Victoria mentioned this, we mentioned in our mission statement, this is a pandemic. So these are before COVID statistics. So just to let you know the enormity of this issue, this is pre-COVID statistics. These statistics come from the CDC. They come from government organizations like www.justice.gov, childwelfare.gov, childhelp.org, which is not a government, but it's these statistics also come from childhelp.org and naturalchildrensalliance.org, amongst others. But we know from reported abuse, and this is only reported abuse, and we know that not all abuse and child abuse is reported, not all children tell. But based on the reports that we do have, the concrete data, 1 in 3 girls are sexually abused, and 1 in 5 boys is sexually abused before the age of 18. Before COVID, there were 50 to 60 million American adults who were sexually abused in their childhood. They are now adult survivors of child abuse. The statistics show that 90% of sexual abuse victims never tell, especially if you were molested by a biological parent. About 300,000 children and youth are estimated to be at risk of exploitation. This is, again, pre-COVID. Over 60% are abused in their own family by their mothers, fathers, uncles, and siblings. About 30% are sexually abused by the caregiver community. This would be babysitters, teachers, camp counselors, ministers, Boy Scout leaders, etc. These are just statistics. Less than 10% are abused by people that they do not know at all. That is stranger danger. Victoria referred and Amy Anna referred to this in their statistics. So most predators are people we know and love and trust. 100,000 are prostituted annually. We call this trafficking. So the average age of these children that enter prostitution is 12 to 14 years old. So this event that Amy, Anna, and Victoria are talking to you about is a platform for, we are hoping that this will be, once you hear about it, pass on the information, what you're hearing, that pass it on, because we know it's going to be a huge event. We know there are a lot of adults who have child abuse who have yet to step forward and to talk about their abuse. And this is an opportunity to show up and have that opportunity to, even if you don't want to speak, to observe and to know that you're not alone. So thank you, Victoria and Amy, for letting me put that in there, because I wanted to back up some of what you've been talking about again to recap, because it's a lot of information. And you know, I think sometimes we have to repeat it because it's almost so unbelievable, right?
It is.
So
it's
thank
hard
you
thinking. You know, it's hard for people to imagine. And you know, I'm also a recovering alcoholic and drug addict who is 35 years sober and drug free. And I can't tell you, I go into meetings and I talk about being abused as a kid. I've been asked to speak many places, and I stand up and say, I am an alcoholic and a drug addict, but alcohol and drugs weren't my problem. And everybody looks at me like, what the heck are you doing up there? I say alcohol and drugs were my solution, because I grew up in an alcoholic, drug addicted family, and that's how they dealt with issues. And that's how they denied a lot of the sexual abuse that was rampant, and abuse and violence and neglect and all the spiritual, physical, emotional, psychological, we could go on, financial. You know, there are so many gamuts of this that we're talking about that a lot of people don't even recognize, you know. And before, like if a kid was having problems in school, they just labeled them a bad kid, you know. And now schools, my niece or my cousin is a teacher in Minneapolis, and she would tell me they finally have all the teachers trauma-informed, so that if a child is having problems at school, falling asleep, you know, getting in trouble, whatever, they don't just label that child as a bad kid, lazy kid, whatever they did, you know, or put them on Ritalin. They research, you know what I mean, go into figuring out why that kid is behaving that way, you know. And like somebody said on our show, it's like, you know, Johnny and Susie are in line, and, you know, Susie accidentally bumps Johnny, and Johnny turns around and slugs her, you know. And there's a different reason for that extreme reaction, you know, instead of just, like, pushing him back and say, hey, what are you doing, you know. There's some stuff behind there. Something's going on that kid has that reaction, you know. And so we have to start looking at kids' behaviors, and we have to start, you know, caring about kids, and not like what happened to me. My grandparents found out when I was a year old and came to live with them. My mother sent us away when I was an infant, when I was on my first birthday. She said, I kissed you on the forehead and said, this is the best birthday present I'll ever give you. Sent me to live with my grandparents away from my dad. And I asked her, why'd you send us away? She said, I just had a gut feeling something was wrong and your kids were in danger. And we were, and she was right. And, hey, that's the mother's instinct, right? Because she didn't know. And anyway, when I got to Minnesota, you know, my grandparents took me, and I ended up in a state psychiatric hospital, which I thought I was going to stay there for the rest of my life, because I was crawling around on my hands and my knees and ended up in the corner, and I'd just be shaking like crazy. And I didn't even know why I was doing this. People were observing it and telling me. So I was on, you know, they let you go out for the weekend, whatever. So I went back to my grandparents' house. You know, I kept seeing them and stuff. I went back to my grandparents' house. I said to my grandma, I said, this is what's going on. And I told her about my behavior. And I said, did I do that when I came to live with you? And she said, yeah, you did. And, you know, I said, well, didn't you think that was weird? And, you know, her voice kept going down and lower and lower. Well, yeah, you know, yeah, we thought that was weird. And I said, well, what'd you do? She said, well, we took you to the doctor. And I said, well, what'd the doctor say? You know, it's like pulling teeth. Well, the doctor said we should never tell you. And I said, well, why not? She said, because the doctor said that if you didn't know, it would never affect you. I said, obviously, it's affecting me. I'm locked up in a state hospital that I'll probably never get out of, you know. At least if you'd tell me what happened, I might be able to, you know, get some help. And they did. They told me that, you know, they could tell that I had already been sexually abused by an examination, you know. And but they you know, I always felt my whole life that I couldn't speak up. I couldn't, you know, even say what my feelings were. I always had all these, you know, your body remembers trauma stuff and never knew where it was coming from and always felt like I was crazy. And I kept telling people I was crazy. And this one friend of mine says, Victoria, you're not crazy. What was done you was crazy. You reacted normally to all these bizarre situations that happened to you. Anybody would, you know. And that's the first time I stopped calling myself crazy. And it's the first time that, you know, because I used to say, you know, I'm a multiple or, you know, something like that. Instead of saying I have multiple personalities or... And finally, I went with NASCA, and I was speaking with them, and they said, you are not your diagnosis. You are Victoria. You have a diagnosis of NPD, but you are so many more things. You know, you're a writer. You're an artist. You're a mother. You're, you know, a daughter. You're a sister. And so by, you know, and even a lot of people say, I have an ADHD child. And the thing about that is, you know what? You're putting the diagnosis before your child. You know, I have a child diagnosed with ADHD. It's a whole different way to look at it. And so we have to change, you know, not only the way we see these issues, but the verbiage and the words that we're using. You know, not a child prostitute, a child rape victim. You know, and some people are saying, you know, you're just, you know, why do you have to come out and be so blunt? And I'm like, because you're using the wrong words, you know. And so anyway, I was saying I go to AA all the time, and I always bring up that I was abused. And I people afterwards say, why do you keep bringing that up? I mean, God, you got this many years of sobriety, and, you know, you think you're past that. And I said, well, I'll tell you when I'll stop bringing it up. And they go, when? You know, like, when? And I said, as soon as after a meeting, somebody doesn't come up to me or call me during the week off the phone list and say, I'm a survivor, too. I've had trouble staying sober because of it, and nobody's talking about it, and I can't believe you brought it up in a meeting. Can I please talk to you? I've never told anybody. Yep. In their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And never told anybody, never reported it. Like you said, the statistics are way, way off base as far as what I've seen. And it is just rampant in alcohol and drug use because, like I said, you know, in the big book it says your character defects, anybody I get that I sponsor, I tell them go through the whole big book, and every time it says character defect, I want you to cross it out and right above it, coping mechanisms. This is how I cope. This is how I got through it. This is how I survived. This is how I survived the memories. And until I got adequate help and support from other survivors, I did not know how to live life on life's terms. And that's the hope I want to get other people, that no matter what you do, and Amy Ann and I are both artists and writers, and that is one way that we can get out a lot of that, you know? And, you know, like I said, and then another thing I wanted to say is I did an interview with the Ms. Texas Show, and it's MS Texas Show with no spaces, and you can see on there it says Meet Victoria. And it's my interview for January, which was Human Trafficking Month, with Ms. Texas, and it's a very intense interview with a whole bunch of information about my life and about other things. And also, since I always warn people that it's intense, I don't want people to get triggered, and I will not be offended if you don't watch the whole thing. But if you know of anybody to pass it on to, that would, you know, might be helpful to them, I would really appreciate that, be it a survivor or somebody that's working with survivors or just somebody you think needs to be educated. Somebody that maybe is working with you and you're a victim, but you're not willing or you're not able to reveal what happened to you to educate them or to educate the community at large, you know. And my interview went so well with them. It got such an overwhelming response that she wants me to come back and do a part two. And so I'm really excited about that. And, you know, I didn't start speaking out right away. I was asked to come and read one of my poems at a Take Back the Night, and I just thought it would be a small little event and just a short little poem I had, you know, or writing I had. And I got there, and I don't know, the park was loaded, and I got up there. And I, first of all, I wasn't gonna, and the lady goes, oh, you can, just get up there. And so I did. And I was standing there, and my whole body was shaking. While I was reading it, I started crying, and my voice was shaking. You know, I was having trouble getting the words out. And like they say, speak even if, you know, your voice shakes. And my voice shook, my body shook, and I was crying, and I figured nobody could even understand me. So I got off the bear, that platform, and a whole bunch of people came up to me and thanked me for reading it and said how much they could relate to it. And that's the moment I knew that my voice had to be heard. And now I want other people's voices to be heard. And if you have to remain anonymous for safety, and I also want to say there's a lot of people that say, well, you know, if you get a certain place in your recovery, then it's your responsibility to speak out and help others. You know what? It isn't. It's your responsibility to live your life the way that you choose. The way that, you know, we were controlled as children, but we have choices now. And nobody should force you into saying that you should anything. And if you choose to speak out or organize or talk to somebody else about abuse, that's your choice. But if you don't have the desire to, that doesn't mean you're not healed enough. That does not mean that you're not going far enough on your journey. I just want to point that out there because I've heard so many times, you know, that's your responsibility. If, you know, you feel far enough, then you need to go out there and tell others so that they can be helped. No, The only thing, your only responsibility is staying alive. And it's good enough that you survived. We are so grateful that you survived what you did because many don't. And that you're still here today to hear this program because many people from their trauma have died of suicide. And they don't even say committed suicide anymore. It's died of suicide because of the pain and the trauma and no help out there in the stigmatization. We want to end all that, you know?
You know, Victoria, you have brought up so many aspects of being an adult survivor of child abuse, right? And I just want to, if I can touch on a few that you have brought up.
Oh, absolutely. Please, yeah.
So you talked about going to your 12-step meeting. You talked about the fact that you bring up your story, you tell your story. You brought the fact that you were on the Mid-Texas show. You read the poem. You were obviously nervous and emotional. Here's my question. Every one of those times where you started off, and I did too, when I told my story, shaking in my boots. Every time I tell my story, I shake in my boots. How did you feel? A succinct answer in a couple words. How did you feel after each time?
A couple different ways. A lot of healing and a lot of fear about how people were going to react and how they were going to think of me after that. And did I reveal too much? And kind of, I don't know, Indiana has a term for that. I'll let her talk a little bit because I could really monopolize the situation, the whole conversation. But you know what?
Okay.
Yeah. Almost every time before I speak or do an event or whatever, and sometimes I just get just physically ill trying to prepare for it, you know? It used to be really bad, but it's not as bad as it anymore. And now, because I've done it so many times, it's gotten easier. But at first, it would be a week or two before I would get so sick because all these memories are coming up and I had to figure out what I was going to say. And I would have to juggle in my head what's okay, what's not. I don't want to trigger anybody. You know, all those thoughts swarming in my head along with what am I going to say, you know. And so, yeah, so things have changed a lot, you know, but thanks for asking that.
Well, and here's really what I'm getting at as well, because we're talking about the healing process. We're talking about your event. We're talking about people that are listening in that, you know, we're all in different places in our healing journey. And we don't compare. It's very individual. We don't do any comparing. Everybody's on their own journey. Some people are contemplating starting it, right? And that really comes from when we contemplate, we haven't really told of our abuse yet. You know, you talked about there are people that have never said, you will go to a meeting and you'll state your truth and you'll have people of all different ages come up and say, oh my God, thank you for saying that. By the way, yeah. Me too, but I've never told anybody. And the reason I asked you the question is what I'm really getting at is that you don't need to go tell a whole 100, 200 people in a group or go on the show to tell your story.
No. No, you don't.
You can tell one person. You can tell one person that you trust.
Yeah.
The minute you tell your story for the first time, the minute you get it out, it doesn't have to be people. It can be one person.
Every well, another person, thing my psychologist said, too, is this is your story, your information. You get to share it whenever, whatever. You know, whoever you feel safe with, and don't feel like you have to say anything that you don't feel comfortable with. Just even if you say to somebody, like you said, me too. That's it. That is enough, and that is the start. And
but
you don't.
You
get which part you want.
Every single person ever told their story has felt better. Has felt better in some respect because you finally releasing of that truth, releasing of that secret, it's also a way to release the shame around it.
Yeah.
It's a release.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, I felt I had so much shame about I didn't escape from my dad till I was 21. You know, of course, I blamed myself and had all that shame. And, you know, I don't know if anybody heard of the book of feeling the shame that binds you, but it talks about the difference between guilt and shame. And I used to say I have guilt and shame about my abuse. And they totally defined what guilt and shame was. Guilt is I did something wrong, right? Like I went to the store and I stole something. Okay, you feel guilt. Shame is somebody else's guilt put on you. And them saying it's your fault. And we have all, not all, many of us have been told it was our fault in one way or another. And guess what? It's none of your fault. Anybody who's a survivor wants you to know it was not your fault. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you were a bad kid, if you think that. No, you're not a bad kid. You had parents, and they should have figured out how to help you and how to love you and how to nurture you. I used to go to my psychiatrist. My first time I went to my psychologist, I kept telling her these horror stories and say, could have been worse, could have been worse, could have been worse. On, I think, the fourth session, she says, stop right there, Victoria. And I go, what? She goes, I got something to tell you. And I go, what? You know, because I was, like, trying to tell her all this information. And she's like, did anybody ever tell you it could have been better? You could have been adopted by people that wanted you and loved you, cared about you, and nurtured you. Oh, boy, I started crying. You know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how long I cried for, months. Yeah.
That is because I think children, even if, I like the way you describe shame, by the way, even if someone else didn't put their guilt on us, on the children that were abused, children, they will accept the blame because it's, and the fault, because it's a way for them to figure out how to survive within the unsurvivable. You know, children are children. When you're being raised in an environment and you're young and you have no way to have any means, right, or wherewithal to live on your own, children are very dependent. These are young children.
And
they
their brain's developing. And how do you process that?
Yeah
how do you even process
it? Yeah. That's how they process that. They have to figure out how to survive the unsurvivable. So they take the blame because if they're actually going to recognize their reality, they wouldn't survive in it. So they
and that's what happened with my MPD. You know, I'm grateful for having MPD and having those ulcers, because I would not have survived if it wasn't mm-hmm. for splitting off. And my mind is developed so much that it was able to do that. It's miraculous. It's actually a pretty amazing miracle, you know. And my mom would joke around and say, you know, yeah, when you guys were little, I couldn't handle your crying. So whenever you cried, I put liquor in your baby bottles, ha, 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 ha. So can you imagine every time we were hungry, every time we wanted to be held, every time we had wet diapers, if she was drinking and didn't want to deal with it, she just put liquor in our bottles. Can you imagine what that does to an infant, you know, with a developing brain, and then to go into all the other insanities, you know, and our brains, they've even proven that people that have been abused as children, your brain chemistry changes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it actually, yeah, you know, but even though all these things are out there and people know them, they can still not comprehend. And they're like, why aren't you over this yet? You know, or why won't you quit talking about it or move on with your life? Or why can't you bring up the happy things in your childhood? You know, and just, I cannot tell you the amount of horrible things I've had said to me.
Yes, I can imagine, because I've had some horrible things said to me as well, and I think a lot of adult survivors of child abuse can relate to that as well, right?
Let's give Amy Anna a chance to speak too,
because
I'm an apple. Yeah.
So, Amy Anna, we want to hear from you.
Well, okay. Okay. I think Victoria Mola said it all. Just want to add that Anna, you had a question. You were going to say something before she threw me under the bus here.
We were talking about, you know, because this is really what your event is all about, is actually, you know, giving these adult survivors of child abuse, giving people a platform, whether they want to speak, whether they want to share something, or they just want to display a platform to tell, reveal, you know, some truth,
yes.
Right? To validate. And so, you know, we're talking about just the effect, you know, when you're an adult survivor of child abuse and you finally tell someone, it doesn't need to be that you get it from speaking in front of hundreds of people. Maybe in your own experience, and maybe not in your own experience, but from what you've observed, you know, how has that helped to actually be able to speak and bring up those things that, you know, we had not felt we were able to bring up and we carried inside? So that was really the question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the first time I did my story publicly, I submitted it to a women's center for their event because I couldn't speak it myself. And they had, but unfortunately I was a good writer and it was very long, so they broke it up into sections. And they read the whole thing and I was crying the whole time, but it really kind of broke the ice for me to go out and do it more. And it was the first time I heard my story in somebody else's voice, and just the compassion and the caring of all the people around, instead of being like challenging or confrontational. They were like, you know, they were supportive and things. I got up to educating on the effects of mental health on of child abuse, of childhood trauma when that happened, the effects, you know, on mental health that childhood trauma gives. And I give speeches to like universities and other organizations. More or less a personal story, but I include other facts and stuff to it that this happened to me. This is what I have because this happened to me. This is how I relate to it. You know, this is my life now on how it has affected me and will always affect me. And just the whole gamut of, you know, sometimes my story is pretty typical. It went from abuse from parents to being raped by a sexual predator I didn't know as a teen, and then being stalked by him from then on. And things, even though I'm married and have my own family now, you know, he was still around, and it was just a lot of that. And that it led to a lot of anxiety and things about speaking out because it kept everything fresh. It wasn't over yet. And things. And when I finally did get strong enough to start speaking out, that's when things really started changing for me. You know, everybody's different, but when I started speaking out and putting things in perspective of, you know, instead of the secret being so big and this is me, you know how it grows when you keep it secret, and it turns into this big, almost overwhelming issue when you go, oh, I can't talk about this because, oh, it's going to ruin Christmas. It's going to ruin somebody's life. They hear about what happened to me or however that thought process goes like that. It really put things in perspective of, no, this person, you know, this person can be supportive and get me help, and it's not going to ruin Christmas, and, you know, things like that. Speaking out did give me a strong way to do it. I was shaking the first time I spoke out, but also I had to plan like 3 days before, kind of get, you know, just rehearse and go, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to share this, you know, and then I had to kind of have downtime for like 2 days afterwards to kind of get over what they call sharer's remorse or whatever. If I didn't, you know, did I share too much? Did I put people off? All things that, well, maybe I shouldn't have said that. All that remorse that kicks in after. And I learned to, you know, I've done it enough now to know how much I need to share to get the point across and how much not to share and things. I enjoy it now, and it's fun. I find I got a lot of nice, good feedback of people educating, you know, of people going into the psych. It was the classes I did were for those that were going into to be therapists or social workers in the mental health field and things. And so they wanted to hear somebody that had been through abuse and had some kind of mental disorder or affliction and things. So I thought I did a good presentation of that. And then COVID came and kind of knocked that out of the water for a little bit. But really that's what we want to do with this event is give people the platform to share their stories, to just stand up and say, you know, this happened to me also. I'm a part of this, and to have that support of, like when I first started healing, I started reading books all about it and learning that, well, hey, somebody had, you know, went through similar to what I went through, and they wrote a book about it, and it's enough to get it published in print and, like, you know, be on some bestseller list or something. So it's like, you know, this thing that felt like I was the only one in the world that had it. It's like, no, somebody else had it, wrote a book about it, and other people, you know, made it a bestseller list. So it wasn't like I was the only one in the world who knew about this. Other people also went through the same thing, and things that just didn't make me feel so lonely and alone anymore.
Exactly. Absolutely. I can completely relate to that. Because, and I'm going to quote Bill Murray, who you're all going to hear more from on Saturday, but our experiences might be slightly different, but a lot of times feelings are definitely the same. I think you did a really nice job of describing that. And I just thank you.
Yes.
So we talked about, you know, we talked about a lot of things I think are probably going to come up, you know, in scenes as people are involved in your event on Saturday. A lot of it is just stories of what happened to us in terms of telling the facts, how we felt, carrying shame. That was really someone else's guilt being put on you. I love the way Victoria educated us on that. Coping mechanisms, dissociation, numbing. Because really coping and numbing almost intercede at some point, right? Because really numbing and dissociating is a coping mechanism. And what you do, you know, on your healing journey, and what you don't do, and how it's really individualized, and how you can become more involved if you want to. And I'm just really excited, and you're bringing up all these things, and I think people are really getting a good flavor of not only what's going to be covered on Saturday, but just all the different aspects of the healing process. Yeah. You're touching on all of them. What we do at NAFTA. So,
well, that's why I said we want to join forces, because, you know, there's so many organizations that are out there that are trying to protect children, that are trying to support adult survivors. And I believe that we need to network with each other, like you guys are having us on your show to talk about our event. Amy, Anna, and I have a Blog Talk Radio show on Thursday night for our organization, and we bring on people, as like you would do, who are survivors and who have information or authors, you know, like you guys do, authors or organizations or whatever, because we need to continue with this networking, you know, and there are just so many places that I want to build, like, kind of a database so that we can network with each other. We can find out, oh, here's another place to get a speaker, you know, not like I'm stealing from you guys, but, you know, that person wants to get their information out too, you know. And so we need to have, you know, I think we need a database, and I also think I want to develop a website where we can put books on that are either informative, like Amy Anna was talking about, survivor stories, you know. And I think also the clothesline around the world is going to be really impactful, because, you know, not everybody can get up and tell their whole story, or not everybody could even say the word incest, for instance, you know. I know many people that say, yeah, I can write the word incest down, but I can't say it out loud. I can't say, you know, I'm a survivor of incest. I can't say the word. It's too hard. But maybe through some sort of creative way, or some creative words that we could put on this clothing or these sheets or whatever, or people can let me know, this is what I want the community to know. Please put this in your presentation. Or you know, the other thing is, you would not be believe the amount of people that are survivors that cannot attend the event that have told me how much it means to them that we are even doing the event, you know, and how much that means to them, knowing there's somebody out there doing something. And not just that, you know, just, you know, showing up at the event. You don't have to wear a sign that says, I am a survivor. because it's for survivors and allies. So as far as anybody else is concerned, you could be just an ally, you know. So there's no, you know, giant red blinking light on the top of your head that says you're a survivor. You know, it's just a get-together, kind of, you know, hopefully going to be big, but it's just a get-together and to bring up these issues and the different aspects, like you said, and as many ways as we can. And I think as we do these events around the U.S. to start with, we're going to be able to add more to it. We're going to be able to, you know, get more clothing from people. We're going to be able to get more people that want to speak out, or organizations, or people that want to bring their literature, or, you know, do a kids program in that certain area that we're going in. And you know what I mean? It's like, let's network together. Let's get our information out there. Let's support each other. And like Amy Anna said, when, you know, she started, you know, educating with the mental health, whatever, there are so many people in the mental health system and that are in their caring professions and stuff that are survivors. And they don't tell anybody their story or the people they're helping, but they're helping survivors, you know, and they're educating people. And so whatever path you go down, and Amy Anna is a fantastic artist and painted 7 amazing paintings for us, which unfortunately somebody put in my storage in the very back and I can't get at them. But we will eventually be auctioning those off so that we can continue to get money to do this project, because we are going to need money for to travel to different places and to ship clothing ahead of time to somebody. That's why we need other people. And if anybody's interested in having us come to their community, you know, also contact me. And that link will bring you to my Facebook page. And I have, you know, I have messages there. And I do check my messages every single day. And if, you know, people want more information, or, you know, even if people just want to share their story, or just put in a message, or me too, you know, or anything, you know, just to feel you have somebody to connect with. I'm also the Minnesota ambassador for NASCA. My phone number is on NASCA website. And although you might not live in Minnesota, if you need somebody to call, my number is on there for a reason, you know. And like I tell people, when I put my name on the phone list at my 12-step meetings, and I say everybody that puts their name on this call list is putting their name on here to let you know that you can call them, you know. The only requirement I have is don't call me drunk or high. And don't expect me to keep the secret if you're suicidal, because I will not do that. I cannot do that, and I'm not a psychiatrist, and I'm not a therapist. But I can relate. And, you know, sometimes I talk to people for an hour, and they'll be ready to hang up and say, Victoria, you've helped me so much. And you know what all I did was listen. And that's what some of us, all we need.
That's true. That's true. That is enough. That,
yeah,
can be enough.
It is.
Yeah,
it is. And it's amazing. When I started in Al-Anon. So my joke is, I've gone to Al-Anon for 39 years, and so my joke is, it took me 3 years in Al-Anon to figure out they were talking about me before I got into AA. but no. My sponsor saw me guzzling out of a bottle and asked me if I was thought I might be an alcoholic. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I said, but I'm one of those alcoholics that can't be helped. And she says, oh, really? What kind of alcoholic is that? Well, I spent 33 years telling her what kind of alcoholic is that. And I lost her about 2 years ago. But, but I did, you know. And one of the things she said is, other people's opinions of you, it's none of your business. And another wonderful thing she said to me, which I'll never forget, and I try to pass it on wherever I can, is don't compare your insides to everybody else's outside, because you don't know what other people are going through. They may appear like everything's okay, but you don't know what's going on inside. And you know, you don't know. And my thing with, like you said, the Perry stories, whatever, you know, I say, let's look at our commonalities rather than our differences. And my other thing is all people smell in the same language. And also, the one thing we have in common is feeling, you know, that's one thing. Now, I went for years not having feelings, you know, I was completely shut down, but once we start going down this journey, and we all do have our separate journeys, we all do have different pathways of healing. And I think we should respect each other no matter what paths we choose, because you know what, we're all going to make mistakes. You can't say, don't do that, and then I told you not to do that, I told you so. You know, everybody makes mistakes, and everybody should have the right to choose. We didn't have choices as kids. We should have the right to choose, you know, what we want to do with our lives and the decisions we want to make. And, you know, there's consequences, good or bad, to everything. And I always thought there were feelings, like the left side of the feeling chart was, you know, these are the negatives, and the other side where the line was drawn were the positives, right? And, you know, my therapist said all feelings are okay. She said the only thing is it depends on what you do with those feelings that matters, you know? So anger is okay. It's what you do with that anger. People say, you cannot afford to be angry or you'll drink. I said, you know what? I was told for years not to be angry, and anger to me was, anger turned inward, became depression, and I started self-harming myself. I wasn't lashing out at people in anger. You know, I had to learn how to express my anger in healthy ways. And, yeah, I'm dang angry at children being abused. I am super angry. Now, I could take that anger and go beat up on pedophiles, right, and do all this stuff, but I don't. I take my anger and I go out to make changes to other people's opinions and to let survivors have many different ways, not let, I don't like that word, but, you know, give other opportunities, you know, suggesting journaling or artwork. And so there are so many forms where we're going to have people read poetry or, you know, and people say, boy, I wish I was a writer. And so what I do is I have a piece of paper and I hand it to them with a pencil. I say, write a sentence. So they do. And I say, give that to me. And I read it and just kind of study it. And I go, guess what? You're a writer. Or if somebody said, I wish I was an artist, it might be something I did that they really enjoy, you know. And I say, they say, I wish I was an artist. And I say, hold on. Get a piece of paper and a pencil. I hand it to them and say, can you draw a stick figure? Oh, well, yeah. So they draw a stick figure and hand it back. I said, hand it back. And they look. I look at it, look it over. I go, oh, you're an artist, you know, because there's no right or wrong way to do it. You know, even if you just take a piece of paper and a red crayon or a black crayon or whatever your color you want or all the colors and just scribble on the paper, you know, that is getting whatever it is that maybe you can't put into words. Oh, and like you said, by telling your story, you're getting it out. You're getting it out of inside yourself. And like Indiana said, you know, you're getting all that seems so big out. And there's so many ways to do that. And so there's, you know, so many things that we can exchange information with each other as survivors. These are some coping mechanisms. Some people call them, this is my tools and my tool belt or something, you know? Well, I did a thing for NAMI. It was on advocating for yourself. And me and my friend did it. And we did jewels in your treasure chest. So I made a great big treasure chest out of cardboard and decorated it. And we made jewels up, you know, big piece of cardboard. And we had coping mechanisms on it. And so now I call them jewels in my treasure chest. And those are my coping mechanisms and my coping skills. And I've learned them from other people and from therapy and being in the hospital and all these things and reading information. And you know, sometimes we forget what those are. And sometimes we need to go back in our treasure chest or ask somebody else to look in their treasure chest. You got anything in there you can share? But you know, I really believe that we all need to work together, and hopefully this visual display, besides the verbal and all the information we're going to have out there for survivors, people that are concerned about children so that they can educate themselves, and maybe the kids that's next door that's coming out of the house crying or has ripped clothes or whatever, they can, you know, if you see something, say something. I tell everybody, you know, we got to figure out how to deal with this pandemic problem. And the survivors, like I said, can continue to speak out. But if we're speaking to deaf ears, and I think the Clothesline Project is going to be a visual display that anybody that drives by it, it's in a small park, but it's on a pretty major road in that area. And so as people drive by, they're going to see this long clothesline full of clothing and a giant sheet. And maybe go, I wonder what that is, you know, and maybe come and look. And the people that come are going to say, wow, I could relate to that dress, or I could relate to that with that one word on the sheet, you know. And it's just going to, I have a feeling it's just going to grow, you know. And I still want, even if you can't get any clothing by Saturday or either words or whatever you want to, you know, contribute, please know that this is an ongoing thing. We are not going to say, okay, Saturday's done, we're done, we did our event, okay, move on with something else. This is something we're dedicated to doing, this event. And we just want every survivor, anybody that's our ally, who cares about survivors, who cares about children, and like I said, that should be everybody in the entire world.
I could not agree more. And I think what's really great too, Amy, Anna, and also Victoria, is that, you know, especially for people that may be coming out for the first time to your event, you know, that have decided to, you know, take that first step, and it's scary. It can be scary. That means, right, we're doing something we've never done before, and so it's also an indication that that's a good thing, right? In terms of healing, when we're frightened, it usually means that we're making progress. We're feeling uncomfortable, it means we're making progress. But I think it's nice that you have, this is not a one and done event. This is not a one and done deal. There is, it's on a NASS website. NASS has been around for a long time. NASS will be around for a long time. So NASS is a platform as well. We can link you with Victoria in the event, but there are resources. There is a place to land. This is and grow and stay, and you have ongoing support. And that's what you're saying. This is ongoing. This is not a one and done, right? This is
just like everybody, every survivor's journey is ongoing, you know?
Yes.
And some days, like I used to say, I go 3 steps forward and 2 steps back. And I used to really beat myself up because I was going those 2 steps back until my sponsor one day told me, but even if you go 3 steps forward and 2 steps back, you're still moving forward.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and that's what matters. And look back where you were a year ago. You know, look, you know, it might feel like it's worse. And I also have a CD from a woman that I met at that first event. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you how long ago it was. I bought a cassette tape of the woman's son, okay, who was singing there. And her name is Kim Storm, and the name of the CD is Warrior Woman, and you can't find it because she only sold a few of them at some Take Back the Night events, and she's moved on to be a psychiatrist. And I contacted her, and she said I could use that music for whatever I want, so I'll be playing that music by where the clothing is. In the background, and one of the songs is "We Are Survivors of the Violence. We Will Not Be Silent. We Won't Go Away Till You Hear Our Voice Today." And then one part goes, "We have come for the children whose betrayal we remember so well." And that is
pretty much says a lot, you know, about what we're trying to do. And then also, we also are inviting the media, and I'm having trouble getting a hold of them, trying to invite politicians, having trouble getting a hold of them. I really, you know, between me, Imana, Reed Marie, and a couple other people from another organization that's going to be out at the event, we're the main ones that are, like, putting all the effort out right now. But we are asking others to join with us because, like I said, this is going to be ongoing, and we just need everybody's ideas and input. So, you know, even if you think an idea is off the wall, you know, please let me know, because when I started planning this, everybody's like, oh, Victoria, like, this is just, like, too grandiose. This ain't going to happen. Why don't you just do this one little thing, you know? Like, no. This is my vision. This is my dream, you know, and I know I'll find people to help me, and go away. You know? But I want to tell you just a quick, I'll try to make it quick. I want to tell you a quick story about why I really feel it's my mission. I was on MySpace dating me again, and they had a support group on there for survivors. And I was writing my book that I self-published, and I had a picture of me when I was a year old when I first came with my grandparents. And I wanted somebody that would take that picture and make it look like, make it, you know, a bunch of different pictures of me, but light to dark, like I was coming out of a tunnel with, like, a light behind me, you know. And so this guy did that for me. And I said, well, can I give you credit? And he goes, no, I'm giving it to you. Okay, then this other woman starts writing to me, and she starts asking me about my abuse, because we're in a survivor's group for incest. Starts asking me all these questions, and I certainly answered her private messages. And then all of a sudden, she started asking me more complicated questions, you know, and we're talking over 15 years ago, you know. And so anyway, I got time on my hands, so I'm researching and citing her websites, whatever she was asking, and I would research it and send her what I thought might be helpful. Then all of a sudden, I didn't hear from her. And all I figured is, well, you know, she's not asking me questions, or I said something wrong, or, well, I don't know, you know. And anyway, it still puts a frog in my heart, in my throat. She writes back to me after quite a while and says, I just want to thank you for sharing your story and for all the wonderful information you gave to me, because my 4-year-old granddaughter will never be molested by her father again. And I can't tell you what that meant to me and what that meant to my life, because I finally found my purpose.
Oh, my gosh, I have the chills, Victoria.
You cannot imagine me thinking back when I was 4 years old, if somebody had rescued me, what my life would have been different.
And you are changing lives. You're changing your own life, and you're helping to change the future of children and the present lives of people who are embarking on their healing journey. And I just cannot tell you how proud I am to know you, and truly grateful that you're doing the work that you are doing. And I know we're up 20 seconds. I have to close out the show, but what a perfect way to end the show, Victoria. That was absolutely profound and beautiful. I want to thank Victoria Kelly from Minnesota. I want to thank Amy Anna. I want you, please, to go on NASCA.org, take a look, the link to Victoria Kelly, A Helping Hand for Healing Souls this Saturday, September 25th. Please, please check it out and attend. As I close the show, I wish to thank everyone for listening in. And again, as we've mentioned tonight, there are enough adult eyes in this world to keep every one of our children safe from harm. If you see something, please say something. Thank you and good night.
Love Talk Radio. Talk Radio.